Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And welcome back. Well, I remind you, I'll do that at the end of the hour. We've already done the most of our underwriting credits. We'll save the last one for the end. We are going to jump into a conversation about the idea of college and whether you need college for success in America. Were you making too much of college? That there's an interesting article that kind of spurred us on. We've had these conversations before, but latest was the article in the Week in Review section in the New York Times. It's the first time I mentioned New York Times today. I decided they should start paying me. it was an interesting piece that just talked about how the majority of young people who are in the bottom 40% of their class who go to college do not finish, and that we do not do anything in this country to train young people for things other than college, and that many of the jobs that we're preparing for in the future don't require a four-year degree. Why does everybody have to have a four-year degree? On the other side, people are arguing, especially in communities of color in America, that, well, what's going to happen is the majority of those kids who don't go to college are going to be from communities of color. They're going to be Latino kids, they're going to be Mexicans, they're going to be Puerto Ricans, they're going to be African-American children, and they're going to be left behind one more time if that's the conscience that we build. So let's put all those cards on the table and have this conversation. We are joined by the phone, by Dr. Robert Lehrman, Professor of Economics at American University and the Urban Institute's First Fellow in Labor and Social Policy. Marty Nemko is a career coach and host of radio talk show Work with Marty Nemko on NPR affiliate in San Francisco, and writes about work and education on his website, www.martynemko.com. Kalila Harris is Executive Director of the Baltimore Freedom Academy here in Baltimore. And Dr. Scott Dantley is Associate Vice President for Planning and Assessment at Coppin State University here in Baltimore. Joining Anthony McCarthy on the show today. And folks, welcome. Good to have
welcome
you all
everybody.
With us.
Thank you.
So let me first turn to our phone guests and kind of get this off the ground. So I think this is really a fascinating conversation. I mean, we've had already like 10 people written in on Facebook to kind of have their comments in that when we posed the question just before we went on the air. And Dr. Lehrman, let me begin with you. And have you begin to kind of map out this idea of why so many are saying now that college education should is not the be-all end-all for all students?
Well, first let me say that the article in the Times Week in Review section reflected some of my views, but not all of them.
Okay.
Basically, I think everyone should have the opportunity to excel in high school and then go on to college. I believe there's an important role for college and universities in the U.S. I teach at one. I have nothing against college. My own view, however, is that by putting all of our eggs in one basket, by not diversifying the routes to career success, we are disadvantaging groups that learn better on the job or perhaps want to do something outside the classroom, at least in their first several years. We are imposing what I regard as a kind of sameness on the population because we have not established quality routes to career success outside the four-year, especially the four-year college framework. And I think that we can see that in other countries, wealthy countries, where these other routes are established, there is much less youth unemployment, and there is a greater chance for long-term success. And by the way, when I talk about additional routes to career success, I'm not meaning that people necessarily will never go and complete college. I'm looking at the world that we have, and the world that we have is one in which there's a lot of students that don't do well, and they have very few quality alternatives. They don't do well in a school framework, indefinitely, stay in school for many, many years. And they could do very, very well in a range of occupations were we to have quality training.
And Marty Nemko, state your position on this as well. Then we'll go to our guests in the studio.
Fairly similar. I'll say it a little differently.
All right.
there's a certain irony in that the very people who are celebrating diversity and call for celebrations of diversity are very often the same ones who insist on one-size-fits-all education, because they feel like, oh, if we have disproportionate numbers of African Americans or Latinos who are in the non-college-bound track, it's racist. Truthfully, what is racist is to plug everybody into one system. I don't care what race you are. If I have a son or a daughter who, through grades 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, systematically is falling further and further behind in academics, she is not academically oriented or he is not academically oriented, I would feel so offended if my child was forced to take Shakespeare, if my child was forced to understand the causes of the Peloponnesian Wars, if my child was forced to understand simultaneous equations, quadratic equations, when in fact that is going to consign my particular daughter, because of their failure to accommodate to her diversity, is going to consign her to a life of second-class citizenship, probably dropping out of high school and or college, and be at greater risk of drugs, drug abuse, violence, gangs, etc. There should be high quality, and I want to underline the word high quality, high school paths for both the college-bound, those who would be best served to go to college, and those who are not. The colleges will scream and they'll say college graduates earn more than $1 million more over their lifetime than those who don't. The problem with that is it doesn't mean that all students do. If you put me, for example, and said people who play for the National Basketball Association earn millions of dollars more, and they therefore use that as an argument to send me to the National Basketball Association training program, I will be broke because I can't play basketball very well. So we should celebrate diversity of learning styles and make sure there are high-quality options for all students.
Kalila Harris.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm sorry that our other two guests aren't here, so I can't address them directly. But I want to make a comment from someone who's in the field of education at the K-12 level in secondary school. And to Mr. Lehrman's comment around all students going to college, the challenge that I see for particularly poor children and children of color is that when you make a statement that you don't have to go to college, ultimately you have systems that then don't prepare children for college. And at the Baltimore Freedom Academy, we take the stance that if you are prepared for college, you will be successful and have evidence that you can be successful anywhere, and that it is your choice not to go to college if you choose not to go. You don't have evidence of whether or not someone could be successful outside of college or in the world of work or in the military for that matter if you're not preparing them for the rigors of college. And I submit to you that, for example, we've had students who want to take the ASVAB and said all
take
throughout
the
ASVAB, the placement test for the military.
Okay.
And throughout high school, you know, they, I'm not going to college, I'm not going to college. And we still drill them. You need to be prepared. You need to be able to analyze, to do critical thinking. So whenever you are taking a test or whenever you're taking on a task at work, you'll be able to attack it intelligently and using your own common sense, relying on your own common sense. And we've had students who didn't take it so seriously, who took the ASVAB and were not able to test into the careers they thought they would have in the military, because they were not preparing to college. They resigned. They weren't going to college. They didn't take their college preparatory curriculum seriously. Whereas we had kids who could have very well gone to college and been successful. In fact, were admitted to college, go on to the Navy, for example, and test into an ASVAB level career that was one that they desired to do. And to Mr. Nimco's point, when I hear a statement like academically oriented, that rubs me the wrong way. Because a lot of children are not doing well in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, or fifth grade because of systems that have been put in place that are anti them being successful in a public school setting. And so to say that myself from a middle class family, mother and father, college educated, if my children don't do well in school, they're probably excelling at something else, and I can make that trade-off and decision as a family. But when you're a child of color who's in a poor community, or your parents have not been college educated, who's making that decision that you're not academically oriented? Who's advocating for you to say you are going to get a high quality education? And if at the point you get to the 10th grade, you decide college is not for you, then I can ride with you on that decision. But before that, you don't get to tell my brown children that in the 5th grade, you're not academically oriented, and therefore we need to prepare you for a trade or to go clean someone's floors or to go work in someone's fields, which has been done for a very long time for children who look like me. And I submit that that is a problem and unacceptable.
We can come. Let's now turn to Dr. Scott Dantley.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to say that over time, we feel that this message has not been consistent in our communities to promote the option, a greater option to go to college. I think that that is really a key. We've had the tracking system that's been very predominant in the school system that continues. And I think that the message that has gone to our kids has been advocated around vocational training a lot more than the college choice. And I think that we really need a more consistent message, seeing that college is an option. But if we take another perspective and we look at the workforce in terms of the changing population over time, folks who are retiring and et cetera, and who's coming into the workforce, I think you'll find that as the change in demographics of our society, there is a need to make sure that all people are given the option to have a professional career. And in terms of being successful, if I look at this article, and I've read through the article, the Times article, and talking about the lower 40% group that's not making it through, I think that you'll find that particular universities and particularly HBCUs and others have been very successful in getting students through and matriculating through the process and are being successful.
Sorry. Dropped my papers on the floor. I apologize. So, Anthony, you want to jump in?
I'm sure Marty wants to respond to what Kalila said about the tracking of black and brown children. But I think it's very important for us to put into context that we have, Mark, for the last decade, for the last generation and a half, been drilling into our children that they have a civic responsibility to their country to prepare for a college track because we are competing in a global marketplace. We're competing in a global environment, and we need our children to compete and to perform at levels like in Asia and levels like in certain parts of Europe. And that has been part of our rhetoric and our speak as educators, as a media, as government for almost two generations. And when I read this story in the Times, as much as it made sense to me, I think we do have to prepare children for vacations and life skills and jobs where they can be successful. And the phrase academically oriented doesn't offend me as much as it does Kalila. But I understand that we've been teaching children and preparing children to compete. And now what we're saying is there are some children, and by some, I'm afraid that what will happen is that we will begin to retract brown children into vocations as opposed to preparing them for academic rigors of college.
I wonder if I could jump in.
Is this Marty?
No, that's Bob Lehrman.
Bob Lehrman, go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, again, I would never discourage anyone from going to college. Moreover, I think up through a certain number of grades, there should be no tracking. That every student we should try to reach a certain level, reasonably high level of academic skills with regard to math and reading and comprehension and so on. However, as you get into the later years of high school, I do think that we are not providing sufficient diversification of routes. And by saying this, I do not, at all say that these alternative routes should be inferior. Howard Gardner is a professor of education at Harvard, has written about the different mind orientations, the different types of skills. We are emphasizing only one type of skill, which is the abstract skills that you use in very upper-level math, and you know, and things like poetry and things of that sort. That's fine. I think that's great for those that want to do it. But by observation, we see that not everybody does. And especially what we're seeing is, in terms of the young men, a big gap between how young men are doing relative to young women. It's for minorities as well as the as well as the white population. So there, and the question then becomes: all right, suppose that we even double, especially among minorities. Suppose we double the black and Hispanic rate of college graduation. That would be a tremendous achievement. But we still have a significant share, perhaps majority, who are not going to be graduating college. What do we do? Do we simply say, well, you know, they didn't make it, that's a sacrifice, or do we offer additional routes for people to go into very highly skilled jobs that are not as academic-oriented in terms of college? So I think what we're seeing now, some of this gets complicated by the fact that the two-year colleges, many of them have some vocational orientation, a career technical orientation. My view is that that's fine, but I would much prefer to see the kind of activity that we see in very, very successful, rich countries in which a lot of the training takes place seamlessly in the work site itself. They still go and take courses, but they have a well-structured and highly skilled and demanding, these are rigorously demanding efforts in the apprenticeship world. So one of the points that was made in the article was that in Germany, for example, where when you take a test that qualifies you for college, and then you can go to college for a very nominal amount of money, very little, used to be free, still very, very low tuition. For the group that passes those exams, 40% of them choose to go on to an apprenticeship. In the case of Switzerland, which is a country that has got 20% higher income than the United States,
right,
per capita income, 70% of their young people go into apprenticeships. Now, some of them, in the aftermath of apprenticeships, then go subsequently to colleges and universities. And that's one of the additional points I want to make.
Well,
I just want to finish this one point.
Okay.
When we allow students to become, to gain mastery over something, mastery of something that they enjoy and so on, it gives them confidence for learning. If we keep them in a one-size-fits-all program, I think many of them will become frustrated and do become.
But let me ask all four of you this question, because I think that I'm trying to hear everything everybody was saying and kind of how you tie these things together and figure out where you take a conversation like this in America. Because, A, that there's nothing you can do in the United States of America where race doesn't play a factor. I mean, this is the nature of who we are in this country.
Correct.
And black and brown folks have been at the bottom of the heap in this country since the beginning. Things may be changing on many levels, obviously. There wouldn't be Khalilah Harris, an attorney. There wouldn't be a PhD sitting here in the studio who's African-American if things weren't changing in America, right? But having said that, and hearing what everybody's saying, is part of the problem is that the only path for success we have for our kids is thinking about them going to a four-year school. That what Robert Lehrman is saying on one level is that there may be many other ways to create a way to make a decent living in America. The Bethlehem Steel is gone. In my first form of in-laws, they worked at Bethlehem Steel, they worked at Procter & Gamble, they made a decent living, they bought a house, they raised their kids, and their kids went to college. Some did, some didn't. But there's no path for people to make a living. That's the problem, I think. So, what you were saying earlier, then I want to hear Marty Nemko come in and respond to what you were saying and then come back to the two guests, is that is the problem kids going to college?
No.
or is problem because you can teach critical thinking.
That is the issue. That is the real conversation. I actually just took that note as Bob was speaking, because I don't really disagree with him if we're talking about other pathways of rigor that can have people have sustainable, successful lives that may not require them to go to college. And again, my issue is that in practice, when you track and you say children are not on a college track, people shut down that whole level of curriculum and education and rearing of children up through the age of 18 and them getting through the 12th grade that says that you have a skill set that will allow you to move into a vocation or an apprenticeship and be professional and understand your craft and have a basic skill set that will be successful there. And if you go to college after that, maybe you want to own your own business in carpentry or construction or plumbing, that you can do that. But right now, I have a critical issue with the concept of everyone doesn't have to be on college track. Everyone wouldn't have to be on college track if there were more of these pathways out there that were meaningful that Bob just mentioned, where they are in high school getting the skill set that they need to be critical thinkers and able to analyze and analyze data, able to participate on a team such that they're producing an outcome that they've mastered the skill set to produce, but that requires a certain type of preparation at the secondary level and throughout your K-12 education. So I won't say that they have to go to college, but they should be prepared for college, and that preparation cuts across vocations.
And you said earlier, one of the issues you raised was the issue of critical thinking skills and, mm-hmm. and analytical skills that we're not teaching our children, no matter what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to be a machinist, you have to have analytical skills to make it work, since these are all computerized at this point. Mm-hmm. So, but Marty, let me bring you back into this so you can respond to what Kalila said earlier and what she's saying now, because it did sound like you were talking about as an element of tracking in the way you were describing kids. So you want to kind of restate that? Or do you want to kind of respond to what Kalila said earlier?
I absolutely do. I am profoundly troubled by Kalila's injection of essentially the subtly veiled accusations of racism, you know, and saying, boy, you just want to track them and put them cleaning someone's floors and working in the field and black and brown. That is precisely the kind of rhetoric that will shut down even the most intelligent, most thoughtful researchers or people who have knowledge in the field. That is very dangerous if we are really more interested in solving the problem than in stating inflammatory rhetoric. We would really pull on ropes of restraint before using such rhetoric. And to imply that, because I said academically oriented implies all kinds of racism, is both unfair and unhelpful. In reality, some people are not academically oriented, just like some people are not athletically oriented or artistically oriented. I can't draw more than stick figures. And I have, both as a researcher but also as a human being who is taught in the inner city, in New York City and in Richmond, seen hundreds of kids being told, you have no choice but to go to the college path, and cry in bitter tears when they don't understand quadratic equation, and make they feel like third-class citizens when they don't understand Shakespeare or the doppelganger. Concretus, as one of the other persons said, you can learn to be a reasonable critical thinker more easily in a concrete context. Even us who have PhDs will often learn better in a concrete context. And for the many kids of all colors, white, black, Asian, whatever, who do not reason well abstractly, and we don't all do that as well, to call simply racist and dismissive my call for more concrete paths for some students who are not abstract thinkers is really ultimately not only unfair to me, I'm irrelevant to this, but grossly unfair to the very children that she is trying to advocate.
Well,
let me finish. With regard to students getting through college, yes, first of all, as the host said, if you graduate in the bottom 40% of the class, your chances are less than 20% of graduating, even if you have 8.5 years with a mountain of debt and a salt of self-esteem. But graduating college is not the holy grail. Assuming you're one of the 20% who do, you have general, vague liberal arts skills, not necessarily great critical thinking skills, and no marketable skills. We have seen millions of these kids who graduate, usually with a degree in sociology or American studies or whatever, which does not exactly yield a great deal of excitement from employers. They end up with a mountain of debt, a loss of self-esteem, the huge opportunity cost loss, than if they had been in a career path, they would have prepared them to be a robotics repair person, not somebody sweeping the floors, somebody being a chef, not picking in the fields. And I just think we need to get rid of the inflammatory rhetoric and let's look in a truly caring way at what would be best for kids and not one size fits all.
Well, let me let you come back. We said to all of our guests here that we have like 20 minutes left here or so, so I want to give a chance to have listeners call in. And maybe even to come back and do a whole entire hour, not just 40 minutes on the subject. It's much too serious a subject. So
sure. And, you know, Marty, if I wanted to call you racist, I actually don't have a problem with saying that directly to you. And I make no veiled attempts at rhetoric. If I want to call you a racist, I will. What I said was the implication of what you're saying for brown children and poor children is such that in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade, which is precisely what you said, it is impossible to determine that a child is academically oriented or not oriented if the circumstances around them are not such that they have a family who can weigh what things they are good at against that academic orientation or lack thereof. So it's not about saying racist and the conversation is over. That's not the point that I was making. The point that I was making is we cannot make broad sweeps about whether or not children should be prepared for college if there are not other options such that Bob distinguished, wherein they can have a rigorous trade or vocation or career or profession that they are well prepared for and that they have developed the skills through their K-12 education that prepares them for that. So minus those things, I think it's very convenient for some people to say, sure, you know, everyone shouldn't go to college and we shouldn't abuse kids who's, you know, for every child that you have that says that they're crying about being told that they have to prepare for college and do a quadratic equation, I can give you 10, 20, or 100 who have been told you will do a trade based on the color of their skin or based upon their economic background and the capacity that someone injects upon them or does not.
So let me kind of ask this question, because I think this is a really interesting panel to have this discussion with, and I really do want to have you all back for a much longer discussion, because this is too important an issue, I think, for us just to do quickly. But, Scott, let me bring you into this. I mean, it's part of the problem here, and then go back to our other guests, is part of the problem the entire educational structure that we have in America, because we end up pushing children to go to college who have no need to really spend their time writing a paper on Hamlet, or to taking algebra, quadratic equations, whatever they want to take. And the problem is that we don't have a system that's built for kids who are smart and want to do something other than college.
Well, I think that the educational system does need some work. I think it could use some work in that area. I think that the message should be that we should have options, and the options should be strong enough to support career choices, vocational choices, college choices. If our kids are going to go to college, we need to have a more consistent message. Over time, if you look at our history, that hasn't always been a consistent message. It's been sports. It's been other kinds of things. And what we're just saying is make sure our kids have the opportunity to know that there are choices. If there's a vocational choice, for example, do we provide some articulation agreements that's strong enough if our kids decide to change their mind later on in life? So our educational system need some support. We need stronger advising. We need stronger counseling for our kids early on, and the examples that we set for them. Definitely.
But let me go to the phones here and get some listeners to join us. And Bethany White-Dinger writes in, I love the schools my friends in Europe, particularly France, attended. They seem to really give equal weight and to prep and vocational schooling. The tracks for each were available in the school system, and there wasn't any sort of stigma attached to either choice. Kat Hudson writes in, college is great for those who can afford it. I'm really sick of seeing jobs that pay less than $13 an hour, expecting everything under the sun and a bachelor's degree. I'm unemployed and have 3 years of college under my belt, but no BS or BA yet. I can't qualify for those jobs because they require a four-year degree. I have tons of experience that apparently is worthless to employers in a job market like this one. And so I think that maybe the conversation we have to have that Robert Lehrman, Kalila Harris, Marty Nepko, and Scott Dantley is, we need to talk about how you restructure education in America, and how do you even begin to get that kind of conversation started, Bob Lehrman?
Well, in the late 1980s, early 1990s, there was a movement and I wrote about it, on youth apprenticeship that would offer really excellent opportunities. And those who really want to read something about it, there's a wonderful book by a man named, a recent book by Robert Halpern called The Means to Grow Up, H-A-L-P-E-R-N.
Mm-hmm.
That youth apprenticeship program still operates in Wisconsin. I visited what was being done there. And, you know, you had kids in banking apprenticeships. You had kids in lab apprenticeships. You had kids in printing. And these kids were not kids that, could do nothing else. They obviously, and here I do want to say, the kids have to be able to achieve at least what we're testing for at the 10th grade level, even to get into some of these things. But then they can go into different approaches. And, we find that when we look at the market and you find out, well, what share of people actually use, let's say, the material learned in Algebra 2? So there's survey evidence about this.
Yeah.
And the share of people in the workforce that use anything connected with Algebra 2 is 9%. Now, one of the things about learning is, unless you use learning, you tend to forget it. So the thing is, what I want is more learning, more reinforcement of the learning by doing and by actually doing actual projects.
So
I totally agree that we need the critical thinking skills, but that's not what we're testing. That's not what we're adding, scores of curriculum requirements on. We're adding just standard courses that people think are necessary for college, but are not necessarily the most appropriate thing for vocational skills.
Well, Marty and Kalila, let me get to the phones here because we have a ton of callers calling in. I want to try to get to some of them before the end of the hour here. To talk about where the common ground lives in this brief conversation two of you have had.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that. The common ground is in the need for real reinvention of schools and a high-quality path for students for whom Shakespeare and quadratic equations are not the best path to career and life success nor critical thinking.
Absolutely.
And that is our common ground. And in my judgment, the most radical but most important solution is one that the teachers' unions will never allow, and that is the following. As you well know, in every school in the United States, every high school, you're required to take algebra. Algebra has been discussed a lot in this hour.
Right.
And there is a full range of teachers. There is the rare, mystical, magical teacher who manages to get students not only to learn the algebra but understand it in their fabric, make it a part of their critical thinking skills. Those are wonderful teachers. But unfortunately, they are rare. And in the 50,000 algebra classes, teachers that are teaching it, 49,000 are not doing that. And in my mind, the best way to improve education for all students, I don't care what race or what socioeconomic status, is to bring together a team of some of the maybe 5 or 10 best algebra teachers in America, pay them a stipend for a year, put them in a room with an outstanding online educator who knows about immersive education, interactive education, simulation education, and have them create the ultimate course in algebra, so that all students who want to take a shot at algebra can get world-class instruction. But the teachers' unions, because that's going to cost jobs, would be violently opposed to it.
Well,
that's the kind of reinvention that would be critical.
Marty, I'm going to interrupt you, but just for a time's sake, I'm going to clearly have the chance to respond and then make sure I get to a couple of these callers.
I absolutely agree. And the premise of your question for us all, Mark, is, you know, should the education system be totally reinvented? And that's absolutely what has to happen. I mean, there has to be a way for beyond that 10th grade level of investment in education and questioning around what students know and they don't know. There has to be some way for students to go out and apply their craft if they found one that that speaks to them and is something that they want to do and they want to excel at. But there is a challenge around how you approach that and not subject swaths of our children to having a substandard education. So that's the balance you're going to have to make. There's going to be a reinvention, but there are already a mass amount of children who already get substandard education and not a high-quality education. And then to put in place a system that dictates that you don't have to go to college without thinking through thoroughly what else do you do, I fear would subject them to even a less rigorous education.
Let me try to get a caller in here before the end of the hour, at least. And Chris, you're on the air. Quick thought.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Chris.
We don't have a lot of time, Chris. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll get right to it. I've been on this for a while. I don't believe in college as it exists today because college was always used as an elite thing. If you can make it through to get to this level, it's really all about learning. If a child comes up learning to love, they'll continue to learn. So when we talk about college, if you go back and actually listen to this conversation, you talked about it in a way as though the person has to – once you – college is really all about learning social skills, and then your first 2 years, you really only do electives, which are basically areas that you covered in high school anyway. Those last 2 years, you actually get into your core areas and upper-level things that you may need outside of what you've already learned. I think that the elite aspect of college needs to be talked about and how the government and private banking is allowed to make money off of it. Is this the only area of education that you have to pay for? Every other area you can go into a public school at whatever level and get that education. Why not college? Because it is an elite form.
You make an important point about where colleges are in today's world. And just going back to what you said about what leads up to it, an old friend of mine who was president of Bard College, Leon Botstein, and one of the most brilliant guys I know on the planet, an interesting man, says that we should end high school as we know it in America today because they're a waste of time.
Yep.
Who just said yep?
Marty Nemko said, I think that kids need to be active and out in the world. I think high schools are a deadening of kids.
But now, Kalila, what do you think to that?
What if I agreed? Would you be shocked?
I would.
I mean, I honestly feel that...
Kalila runs a high school. That's what I'm saying.
Students who are able to learn in real time and through relevant context are way more successful than sitting in a traditional classroom. So,
now, folks, this is something I promise. I hope I can get you all back in the next month for a much longer broadcast. And I do apologize for making it so truncated today. Robert Lehrman, Marty Nemko, Kalila Harris, Scott Dantley, thank you all for being here. And I do appreciate all your thoughtfulness together. It's been a very interesting time. And I do look forward to having you all back again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Bye. Anthony McCarthy.
I'll see you on Wednesday, brother.
We'll see you on Wednesday and we'll do a little
post-election. Birthday boy.
It is. Actually, 7 o'clock will be my official birthday. Wow. That's when I was born. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite. This month, Urbanite explores the city's contemporary art scene and prospects for leveraging this cultural energy into a force for broader community change. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a complete list of pickup locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Floyd, Richard Good, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our subjects, topics, and guests, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.